Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and The Sunday Times. Now with goals.
Hello and welcome to The Game, the football podcast from The Times. The very first edition of the 2014-15 season. I'm Rory Smith, standing in for Gabriele Marcoppi, as he is still sunning himself somewhere exotic. In the studio this week we have Tony Castorino, Gary Jacob and Julien Laurent, who's French. Let's start off actually by finding out what you've all done this summer. Tony, how was the World Cup for you?
Loved it. Probably saw two of the most incredible games in any World Cup.
England against Costa Rica.
The Spain-Holland game. The early part of the tournament I just thought was incredible, where Spain took the lead, could have gone 2-0 and end up losing 5-1. And then the obvious one, the Brazil game against Germany, which probably will top the all-time list of most amazing games that I've ever seen. Enjoyed it, loved it, and then sort of chilled out and waited for what we've got coming now, the Premiership.
Excellent. Gary, similarly excited?
Similarly excited for the start of the Premier League, yep. Spent the summer just watching it here while you boys are out there enjoying yourselves. Tell them we'll get the dig in now. And bit of a disappointment. Some of the bigger players didn't quite perform perhaps as they could have done. And watching Brazil was a bit disappointing towards the end. But yeah, apart from that, very enjoyable.
And Jules, we've just been saying that France kind of bottled it a little bit in the quarterfinals, didn't they?
Yeah, a little bit too much respect towards Germany, I think. We could have pushed them a bit more. I think we lacked a bit of experience. We saw that on the goal we conceded. However, it's a very good platform to work on forward towards the Euros, which will be at home, and which I think, giving this team two more years, we'll have a great chance to win.
And we're all agreed that Lionel Messi was the best player at the tournament, yep?
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Good.
Flick on by Giroud. That's Ramsey on the far side. Back into Giroud. Holds off his marker. Lets it run across him. Hits it with his left foot and finds the top right-hand corner. And Giroud making an impact after coming on as substitute. Fantastic strike.
Right, let's move on to the Community Shield, which happened on Sunday. Arsenal winning 3-0 in a game that matters if you win it, but doesn't if you lose it. They were quite good, weren't they, Jules?
I thought they were really good. That first half was brilliant. I think Manchester City was still in Manchester, and they didn't really turn up. I don't think they were that bothered, to be fair. Yaya Toure was just not there, which is a bit hard to understand. However, I think credit has to go to Arsenal for the way they set up the game, the way they took control of the game, the way they played, especially in that first half. I thought they had some great individual performances as well. But overall, as a team, I think it was very, very promising.
Tony, it looks now, there's a lot of the real sort of sense of momentum around Arsenal, isn't there? They seem to have a bit of positivity. They've won two trophies in a row. They're a machine.
Added a bit of pace. You know, obviously Sanchez coming in and I just felt that it was easy to play against City yesterday, because I know City didn't get him a birthday card or a cake, but they must have bought him 50 Yaya Toure because he's at the lot. I thought, it's most embarrassing I've seen performance. It was absolutely disgusting. He's turned up and not even raised a leg. And he looked out of sorts. I mean, I was saying to Gary before we came on that, you know, how can a group of so many players come back a week before or 2 weeks before the start of a Premiership? Yes, they played World Cups and some of them didn't play the finals. You've got to be back earlier, even if that means a shorter holiday. I just didn't get City at all. And Arsenal weren't tested at all. We didn't learn anything about them, because one thing we've always known about Arsenal is, certainly with Wenger's teams in recent years, is when they come up against sides that are very well drilled and organised, they found it difficult. And that was not what City could do yesterday. But certainly going forward, Arsenal look a far more accomplished and a lot more speedy approach, and get Walcott back in a month, be another bonus for them.
Gary, you were there with me.
Yeah, I think we were both saying in the first half, perhaps they didn't get Sanchez on the ball enough early on, and he seemed to be stuck on the right wing, and perhaps they need to learn that to get him involved a lot more. And I think towards the end of the first half, they did get him involved a lot more. But perhaps one thing about him, I thought he wasn't selfish enough yesterday. There's a few times he had opportunities and he looked to pass, and perhaps instead of just taking it on his own and having a go, and he was almost kind of too unselfish.
Well, he's been playing with Lionel Messi, so he's not allowed to shoot.
Well, now he's got Sonogo, so, so I'm sure he'll be happy with that.
I think yesterday is a prime example of if Alexis had started up front on his own, he would have scored a hat-trick. There was so much space for him, and City was so all over the place. Mm. And I do believe that his best position is on his own up front. Maybe not in a massive physical game away from home in December at Stoke City, but in a game like that, I think he would have run riot into that City defence.
Especially with the type of midfielders that Arsenal have. You know, that direct 10-yard ball that can split a back four. I think he would really shine. I mean, City left a lot of people out. You know, let's face it, the people like Company, Leaders and Silvers, they're main players for them.
They did, but a lot's been made of City's strength in depth. And the sort of the received wisdom is that City got the best squad in the league. Now, looking at it yesterday, there were a lot of players missing. There were sort of between sort of five and eight, nine or ten first teamers missing. But looking at it yesterday, a lot of that second string didn't look up to that much.
Personally, I think it stinks of a club that have had a very low laid-back approach to this particular game and pre-season. There's one thing turning up and, you know, you're not quite right and maybe a little bit disorganised, but some of them looked unfit. They didn't look right physically. That's another problem. Now, before a game like the Charity Shield, you have build-up in the local paper in Manchester, and the fans didn't seem bothered. The fans didn't seem bothered. The manager didn't seem overly bothered. The players certainly weren't, and especially Yaya Toure weren't. That's a bad sign. That's not a good thing to have, even leading into the season. And they only last year, when push comes to shove, they did turn up. But when they looked like they'd thrown away the premiership and it seemed overly bothered, they were given a chance and they took it. I don't think they'll get away with that this year.
Gary, in terms of City, where do you think they stand? The contrast with Arsenal was quite interesting, that Arsenal kind of had this... They spent £60 million or something this summer. They seem to have this momentum behind them. City, for various reasons, have had to kind of stand still a little bit.
I mean, they are obviously going to buy a centre-back, and that's obviously where they're short. And it's hard to read too much into this game because it is just a friendly. I think what you said is right, Rory. What you learnt is the second string perhaps aren't quite as good as they should be. I think in centre-back, Nastasic, who they might sell, isn't perhaps as good as he could. And they've had problems there in centre-back in recent years. They've bought quite a few that haven't quite worked out. They've bought their holding midfield players, have looked at a few, haven't quite worked out. And perhaps that was kind of evident. Beata wasn't brilliant. He was a bit weak in some of the challenges. Clichy was given the ball away, and there's no excuse for Clichy, really. He should have been.
There were two actually just before
Dzeko looked like he was up for it in stages, but he had no service at all. And the goalkeeper thing was obviously what you're going to come on to, which is the interesting.
Who do we think is first choice at Man City now?
Me, definitely Hart. I can't see it, but that's how I see it. But I'm getting to read that more and more that maybe he's not going to be. That's quite surprising to me.
For me, it's obvious, Caballero. There's no doubt about that.
It's like your dad has a company, you work for another company, and then your dad says, oh, come and work with me. The Pellegrini and Caballero have an amazing relationship.
That's what I'm alluding to, what I'm reading. Yeah. You know, and to be fair, you know, you think that Hart last year had a really poor time, didn't he? Cardiff away, Villa away, Chelsea, cost goals. He got left out, he came back in and done brilliant. And maybe that disharmony, what we're sort of looking at with maybe like Yaya Toure a bit, and then you're finding Hart might think he's now under threat of not playing, that it did stink of a little bit of a problem at City. It really does.
Well, it's
all the money to play for a number two goalkeeper who's going to sit on the bench.
Well, they kind of had the perfect number two goalkeeper in Pantelimon, didn't they? He was kind of all right. And he was happy being a number two.
And it's interesting, you look at what's happened to the goalkeeper position this summer, was that Liverpool were going to sign Vorm, but didn't sign him because they didn't think they were going to get rid of Reina. And Vorm wouldn't have been number two necessarily. At Spurs, he is Is he a number two? He's probably better than a number two. Arsenal have got a new goalkeeper this summer, Ospina, who's probably not going to be a number two, is it? And it's interesting in this sort of goalkeeper situation where managers obviously, well, I'm not really sure about that. I'm actually going to make this a position where maybe I haven't got a number one.
But it's hard with goalkeepers.
Chelsea, isn't it?
Hard with goalkeepers because some keepers have to be, they have to kind of know, you'll notice, they have to know they're the number one. They feel they have to know they're going to play. Whereas other goalkeepers respond quite well to the pressure of having someone pushing them. So it's really, I find them fascinating. I find reserve goalkeepers really interesting.
Well, I found that many goalkeepers, insecurity is a real big thing because it is only down to one position, isn't it, for them? They've only got, it's not like a centre forward. There might be two choices and you can play a different way. With a keeper, you're either in or you're out. And a lot of them are very insecure and they're very sensitive about, you know, the number two. I've always said the maddest people I've met in football have always been goalkeepers.
Who's call do you think it will be? Do you think it was Pellegrini's or do you think someone like Kompany will step forward and say, look, I prefer playing in front of this type of player because he does a certain type of thing as the goalkeeper?
Well, I guess it has to be, well, Pellegrini will make the choice, cool, I guess, but to get to that stage, he has to give Caballero a chance, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. He's got to say, right, we've seen what Joe Hart can do with Kompany, and I mean, I guess bringing in Mangala is an extra sort of complicating factor.
Well, the only way you change it as a manager is if results and performances are not good enough and you have to change. He can't sit on the bench at City. You know, he's performed for England, he's proved he's number one, he bounced back from a really bad period brilliantly, won the title, and then he's been left out. He cannot take that.
But what's worrying for him, though, is where would he go?
Well,
there's no big clubs with a keeper.
The one that looked at him was Real Madrid, but they've obviously signed Keylor Navas now, so they're out of it. There is nowhere else to go.
There's no other big club.
You, as a player, you might think, oh, there's nowhere to go, but you ain't going to sit there and think, I've got nowhere to go here. Even worse.
Well, I think there might be some, I mean, he wouldn't necessarily go there, but I think there will be a vacancy at Liverpool sooner than later.
Just wanted to ask one question, because there's links to the moneyed French club, Paris Saint-Germain. You looked at the kind of the Touré incident, and we're talking about Joe Hart, and it looked yesterday, and I'm not for a minute alleging anything about Manchester City, it looked yesterday like none of the players were that bothered. The Man City players weren't that bothered. It's quite hard to engender that spirit that you get at clubs where maybe a generation of players have come through together, not necessarily from the academy, but they kind of come through over the course of 3, 4, or 5 years together, building towards something. With City and PSG, is that the final kind of thing that they struggle to find? Is that kind of sense that those games really matter?
The point they've got in common as well is the lack of French players in the PSG dressing room and English players in the City dressing room. And I think, you know, a player like Julian Lescott, he didn't play much. It's true. He was probably not good enough, you know, to play every game for them in the Champions League and in the league. But he was a very important player in the dressing room. He was English, and he gathered everybody together, you know, and let him go. Or he wanted to go for obvious reasons because he was not playing enough. But I think you lose a lot.
You know,
and more off the pitch than on the pitch, I get that. But in terms of getting the players pumped up for a game like yesterday, you know, getting the guys together, I don't know, to go and have a meal together or something like that. Those players are very important. And PSG are lacking some of them as well. And I think at some point, Pellegrini will have to be very careful that the Spanish talking, for example, are not always just together, that the team can gel.
Well, think about it. What you're doing, you're enticing players, big name players. Look where it started with City, Tevez. What did they entice him with? A shed load of money. Just keep throwing money. He kept saying no to Man United. He was there. He didn't want to go there. Kept money. So they enticed him with money as the number one factor for him to go there. So he goes there. And so what you create is then you get a number of players are being bought to City to come because of the huge wages you can get. So if you can't create a hunger within the group and a desire, people like Kompany, that we know we're guaranteed that, aren't we? It's not about money, it's about performance, and the money comes as well. But you have certain players at clubs like PSG, like Man City, if it slightly goes over the edge, if water starts dripping out the glass and fractions start to happen, it can turn into a real disaster.
Well, you've got people like Kompany and Zabaleta. Zabaleta's a great example of a player. It means more to him than... the club means something to him. But you look at Touré, wanted to go this summer, couldn't go anywhere. Aguero, it's probably fair to say that he would leap at the chance to sign for Real Madrid. If that chance came up, he would go. You wonder occasionally about David Silva as well, whether Silva would go to Barcelona if the chance came up. That, after a while, that does kind of seep into the consciousness of the club.
And you're bringing in players like Sanya, who's turned down to Arsenal, who's gone there purely for more money. Yeah? It's obvious he's gone there for more money.
There's something very interesting Wenger said on Thursday. He said, the good thing about signing young English players is that they probably can stay their whole career at your English club. And it's very rare to see, well, sometimes you see, but at least in the top four, to see a young English player, you know, you can't see Wilshere one day playing for Manchester City, for example. No. You know, you probably can see him playing all his career at Arsenal. Maybe Callum Chambers would be the same.
Yeah.
Foreign players are different. Mm. You know, like Ravi said, they probably at some point think, oh, let's go home. You know, it's raining all the time in Manchester. You know, it's Barcelona, it's Real Madrid, it's this, it's that. Yeah. My wife would be happier there. Well, whatever. And there's that tendency, obviously, that you don't find with English players.
Yeah. You were mentioned just about Chambers, what do you think of him, Rory?
I thought there was one point that we both noticed where Dzeko burned him off, which I've never seen Edin Dzeko do to anybody. But I thought Chambers played very well. I thought certainly out of him and Debuchy, he looked the more assured. I think it's odd that a full French international could cost £10 million, and someone who's played 23 first team games for Southampton might cost £16 million.
Yeah.
I think that says a lot about how valuable it is being English. But no, I think Chambers is a nice lad. He's very Arsenal in that sense that he's an intelligent, articulate sort of person, which a lot of their players are. I think he'll do very, very well.
What was the surprise yesterday was when Wenger came out after and said Arteta was going to be his captain, because we were led to believe it was going to be Metsaka, and I don't think I'm not sure anyone really was convinced that Arteta was going to be at Arsenal this season, apart from maybe in a squad role at best. And I certainly, they were trying to sell him a few weeks ago, so that was interesting. The other thing is, it's clear yesterday Wilshere was pushed forward a lot more, so it was almost like a 4-1-4-1. Arteta can't play that role in front of the back four, because Arsenal will just be just completely taken apart by a better team. Just three attacking players will just steamroll Arteta. So Wenger's got, he needs a holding midfield player, he needs a centre-back, and actually he probably needs a forward, really. Because Sonogo, you're never quite sure what's going to happen with him. The ball hits him.
I don't think he is.
His first touch can always be a pass. I don't think he knows, does he, really?
No.
He causes confusion because he doesn't... because you never quite... I don't think he knows what he's doing. And is Giroud good enough at the top level?
Well, you see...
Perhaps, he made his point yesterday, but is he? I don't know.
To bring it back round to where we started, I would imagine, as Jules says, by the end of the season, we'll be seeing Sanchez playing through the middle. That's where he wants to play.
Yeah.
And he gives Arsenal a different kind of option.
It still requires Walcott being back, I think.
Yeah.
And everyone talks about Wenger loving pace. If you look at the last 5 years, Arsenal haven't really had that much pace, apart from Walcott. If you go back 10 years, they did. And you can talk about...
That's when Patrick, they were successful.
Successful
game,
was the way Patrick Vieira brought the ball out, and you had Omri, and you had the type of play they had. But for the last 5 years, it's been a bit tippy-tappy, and a lot of... In front of the other.
Do you think Wenger's realised that's not worked and he's going back to what made him successful?
I think just he realised he needed another dimension after last season. I think he was just short of another dimension, really.
But just a little bit on the Football League, which started this weekend as well. I know Julien is a devoted fan of Colchester United. But to start off with the Championship, it's the usual chaos, isn't it? So Huddersfield have lost their manager. Mark Robbins has gone after one game. Got loads of teams who are in debt. Loads of owners and managers at each other's throats. It's just vaguely chaotic, the Championship, at all times, isn't it?
Yes, it's been like that for a number of years. Obviously the golden nugget is the Premiership, and people throw everything, the kitchen sink, and to get there. I remember having I can't remember his name, you'll probably tell me, that Bristol City chairman once said, you know, he'd lost 12 million in one season.
Lonsdale.
Didn't mind doing a couple of million, and that was the time of bringing James and, you know, some high wages. And the risk is a bit too much. Parachute payments and the way they use their money. I think Ross McCormack as well. I couldn't believe that was one of the biggest surprises in the transfer, that they paid 12 million for him for Fulham. I was just amazed, you know. And I think the Championship has so many contradictions within it, but I still enjoy it. I do enjoy it. Leeds is a problem, and we felt for Robbins yesterday. I mean, the lad he had at Coventry, he hardly played. He can sometimes come and haunt you. Ends up getting a couple of goals for Bournemouth. Against his team, you know. So it's a real strange league, and all season we'll be coming up with something from every week in the Championship.
Is anyone you fancy team-wise, player-wise, anyone to look out for?
I fancy Derby. Haven't seen him last year. I thought they played some excellent football, and I think they're unlucky with Thorne's injury. They bought him. He was their big buy, and he's got injured. But I think I certainly fancy them. I think it was interesting to look at the Fulham. Although Fulham have spent lots of money on McCormack, you look at the rest of their team, you think they're barely recognisable from the team they had last year. So they're going to be an interesting... I think it's one of those things that people assume just because you've got lots of money in the parachute payment, you're bound to come up. But the stats actually show that's not true. I think 17 of the 64 teams that have gone down over the last 21 years have come back at the first time of asking. So a lot find it very difficult to make that adjustment.
It's two of the last nine as well.
Yeah. And I think what the other teams say is that over the period of the parachute payments, you're more likely to come up than not. But that first year is quite difficult to adjust. And certainly, if you look at Leicester came up, I mean, they narrowly lost out the year before and Burnley, and they weren't.
There's an adjustment, isn't there? Because the wages thing can be a problem. I think, first, when it happened a few years gone back, white players were still on the same wages.
Yeah.
Now clubs are having to adjust if they have failure. So it is slightly different. Clubs are learning, strangely enough.
When you look at Fulham, they've sold loads of players, and I mean, I watched the last sort of 20 minutes of their loss to Ipswich, but Patrick Roberts, who came on the little winger, looks a player.
Yeah.
And Heimer as well, the midfielder, looked useful as well.
I mean, obviously they've got a lot of good youth players coming through there, and you know, but it's a big ask asking them to come through a championship, which is quite a sort of tough, rugged division to kind of bring them out. You know, Leicester aren't an attractive team, and they play a certain style, and they came up because of that. So it's quite a tough ask. I mean, Cardiff will be interesting, really, what happens with Shelskog, because it's a basket case of a club, you know. They've obviously, you know, if he starts to lose a few games, you kind of wonder what will happen there.
And Bournemouth as well are an interesting sign. Are they your team?
I'm a big fan of Eddie Howe. I think he's a brilliant manager, and I think what they do at Bournemouth, it's just brilliant. I know they've got good financial backing, which is important, but just the way they do their business, the way they play as well. It was a great win for them this weekend, but I think Eddie Howe is a brilliant manager.
Would they pay for the lad Wilson? Is it $3 million?
Yeah, something like
that. That's a lot of money for a club that was nearly out of... Yeah. You know, the lad Wilson for $3 million, you know, that's big money for a championship.
They have a Russian backer, don't they?
Yeah.
So they've but Sammy Hippier would be interesting at Brighton as well, to see. It didn't really work out for him this weekend, but, you know, he had first great 6 months with Bayer Leverkusen last season, and then the rest was a bit more difficult, but it's interesting that he chose Brighton and see how he does there. It's a very interesting league, to be fair.
Brighton are kind of the poster boys almost for it. They're one of 13 Twice. Teams who don't get any parachute payments, but they've got the highest average attendance in the championship. Terrible traffic at Farmer, which means I don't want them to be promoted. I'll go on record and say the traffic is so bad outside that stadium, I don't want Brighton to be in the Premier League. But they are the sort of side that have built sustainably. They should be the sort of team we're all encouraging if they improve their traffic to come up.
And they also have an owner in Tony Bloom that's one of the shrewdest men in outside football. You know, that certainly knows how to get things done, and I think they'll be okay, Brian.
Well, they've knocked on the door twice, and this is an interesting year for them, isn't it? They're either going to maybe do it, or they're going to kind of just be a mid-table team. Yeah. I think if you knock on the door a couple of times and you don't go up, players get well. I want to go. You know, the good ones start to kind of itch. You can keep them for
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's interesting, you look at Derby, you can keep them for 1 year, the good players. I was chatting to the CEO there, and you can keep them for 1 year, but the second year, if you don't get up, they're going to, a few start to bang on your door, so...
Interesting. I mean, I look, Kenny Jackett, Wolves, very experienced. Done the rounds in many capacities. Millwall, I knew they when they'd lost a good manager when he left, and they come at a price. Then you have the Blackpool situation. I just find it incredible.
Yeah. Sheffield Wednesday, the owner, you know, really sure the guy, apparently bankrupt in Azerbaijan. It's just a complete mess.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's a bonkers league.
Yeah, it is. It's but it's always exciting to watch.
Let's just have a little bet from Fulham, Norwich, and Cardiff. Who went down? Who do you think will go up?
Out of them three, I don't think any of them three have got up.
None of them.
No, I don't think any.
No. None of them.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I fancied Derby.
Wigan.
Yeah,
Wigan.
They're a good side. I think there's a few clubs, I go back with stability, like to Kenny Jackett's Wolves, and Mick McCarthy, Ipswich. There's stability there that I'd give them a better chance.
Let's move to the Premier League, the most exciting league in the world, the best league in the world, the richest league in the world. We all love it. Isn't it amazing? Right, well, basically, there's no real structure to this. I want to know who you think is going to win it, who you think is going to be a star, what we should look out for in the course of the season. Mm. Tony?
I think Fabregas is going to be a star for Chelsea. I think it's the most intriguing transfer of the summer. I think if he shows anything like he was as an Arsenal player, then it's a fantastic signing for Chelsea. They'll be the best organised, without doubt. They've got the best back four. We'll have probably the best goalkeeper.
They might have both the best goalkeepers.
They will be the best at set pieces. I think a lot of teams, and they're going to find out this year, how difficult it is to handle the likes of Ivanovic, Terry, Cahill, Costa. You know, real handful from set pieces. I think they'll be the team to beat, and they're so organised. And Mourinho's team will be better than they were last year.
Gary, is there pressure on Jose Mourinho this year to deliver a trophy?
I wouldn't say there's pressure on him, but he would put the pressure on himself. I think that's the thing. He's a guy who's won everywhere, and interestingly, he's often won in the first season. Well, he won in the first time he was at Chelsea, the first time. And this is, I think, there'll be a bit of a nagging thing. But I agree with Tony. I think they probably have got the best all round squad. I disagree with him about Fabregas. I thought there was a comment Wenger made when Fabregas was leaving Arsenal. He said that the one thing you've got to remember about Fabregas is he's a 24-year-old but with about 8 or 9 years worth of football in his legs. And I thought that was quite an interesting comment. It kind of told you that he's like a going on a 30-year-old because he's just had so much football from the age of 16 compared to other players. And I think perhaps whether he's not the player he was. But they're strong all over, aren't they, Chelsea? It's hard to see where... Liverpool, to me, the interesting one because they've done so well last year. If we're honest, Rodgers could well have been out by Christmas had he not started well. He did fantastically well at the end of the season. He sold one place, but he's brought a bunch of other ones in, and I think the pressure's going to be on. He's got the Champions League. He hasn't got Suarez. I think that's going to be the interesting one of how Liverpool do this year, and can they repeat what they're doing? Can they step up a level? I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, so this being the Times, obviously, we don't like talking about Liverpool.
No?
I think the thing with Liverpool is they've done...
I must have been away that week.
I think they've done some very sensible business, Liverpool. I think Suarez going kind of had to... It was always going to happen. But I think they've done sensible business without it being overly exciting. And you do wonder whether there will be kind of almost a psychological hangover from losing Suarez, that they were so reliant on him for so long that they might struggle a little bit to get used to the idea that he's not there. But I always felt a little bit that he was kind of at odds with Rodgers' philosophy, that Rodgers wants to cherish the ball. Suarez's genius is that he's so careless with it. You know, he constantly sort of nutmegging people, the ball ricocheting off his knee. He developed that trick in January where he was actually aiming for people's hands, which I've never seen before in football. Won about 4 penalties from handball, which he was doing deliberately. So I think it might be that Liverpool become more of a Rodgers side without Suarez, but whether they're as effective or not, I don't know. But I'm in charge today. So we're going to go back to Chelsea. I think there's two interesting things about that Tony and Gary said that I wanted to pick up on.
Me too.
One is Fabregas. Mm. Now, you see, I think Fabregas is a wonderful footballer, but I think that what we saw at Barcelona is that he is not as good as the Iniestas, the Xavis and the Messis. He's not in that class of footballer, and that's why he couldn't get a regular first-team place at Barcelona. The other thing that I wanted to mention is this idea that Mourinho kind of perpetuated last season, that Chelsea weren't good enough to win the league, their squad wasn't good enough to win the league. Now, to me, given that Liverpool went quite close to winning the league with a squad that is, without question, inferior to Chelsea's, that was kind of a little bit of a lie from Mourinho that he'd want everybody to believe. So to me, there is pressure on Chelsea. There is now no question now that they certainly have the best first 11, I think. They may well have the best squad, depending on what we think of City. So, Julian, you can talk about either of those points or anything you want to raise yourself.
Yeah, it's just on Fabregas. My issue or my concern is tactically. Fabregas can't defend. If you play him in a 4-2-3-1 with Matic next to him, he will go forward so many times. And I remember Wenger saying to me one day, Fabregas unbalances your team if you don't play him in the right position. And the right position for him is probably behind a striker where he doesn't have to do any sort of defensive work whatsoever. If you start playing him in a position where he will have to either cover Matic when Matic goes forward, which won't happen much, but still, or where he will have to have some sort of defensive discipline somehow, somewhere, I think it could be a problem.
I disagree, Jimmy. I'd say for why.
There's a look of steely determination in Tony Cotterino's face.
If you look at Chelsea's team, you go Aspilicueta, you go Ivanovic, you go Terry, you go Cahill, you go Matic, you go Ramirez, you go William. You've got seven, maybe even eight, nine players that are fantastic without the ball and get the ball back regular. I think he will play that position just behind Costa. And I think he'll play that position. And he can say, do you know what? We lose the ball, we'll get it back elsewhere.
In that case, no problem.
I play him a bit deeper. I don't think he'll play that deeper position. I really don't. He'll play that deeper position because I think if you want to get the best out of Fabregas, he has to be further up the park.
I agree.
You know, he's looked at and probably gone, I've lost Lampard, I've lost Drogba over the last few years. There's 40, 45, 50 goals there, you know, from them two players. Can I get Fabregas to get 15? I think he could. And I think he might think I can get 20 plus for Costa. So I think the rest of the team is going to be, we'll get the ball back.
I think what you're saying, Roy, was interesting. I mean, the one thing what he didn't have last year was a striker, which he can't complain about now.
Yeah, true.
Which is, that's probably the one thing where he was inferior to everyone else last year, not having someone who can get him 25 goals and be the difference. You know,
Chelsea weren't perfect last season, but I think there was... certainly if Liverpool could have won the title, then Chelsea could have won the title.
Yeah.
Because Chelsea had a better squad than Liverpool.
Yeah. The last three Chelsea games are two home defeats. Were amazing. You never would have thought that Chelsea would have dropped points in them games. If anybody threw it more than anyone away, it was Chelsea.
I think what's interesting with Chelsea is he's got too many foreign players. He's got to kind of lose one. Does he still want another forward? Or what else does he still need? Or has he got enough? And will Torres stay? I mean, I think Chelsea are saying he will stay, but I think there's still a bit of murmurings. There's a bit of murmurings about whether Schürrle at the moment. You kind of wonder, you think there's still a little bit of
Isn't
to go at Chelsea this month.
The guy that's won the World Cup and had a good World Cup in Schürrle, we probably think he won't get in the Chelsea team.
I know.
And he's been, over the last week, he's suddenly been linked to places, which is interesting to me. That tells me that whether he's been told something or whether he's thinking, I'm not going to get in the team and I need to kind of go about it. I mean, it's always interesting when that kind of happens and you start to see links. I mean, he was linked to PSG, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Everyone's linked with PSG. Tony was linked with PSG the other day.
Who would have him?
They were quick to deny it. What do we make of Costa?
Cheers,
Tony, you were a lumbering striker. What do you make of Diego Costa?
I'm going to be very biased because I watched a lot of him in Spain and I love watching him for Atletico. I thought he was fantastic. And I felt it was very unfair to judge him on the Spanish performance in the World Cup because that was a team that obviously lost its edge, no real direction about how they were going to play.
He was not fit either.
No, and he'd been injured, you know, for the Champions League final. He came off. He came off in the semi-final. He didn't make it, did he? So, you know, he wasn't right. I think we'll see a Costa that was far closer to Atletico player.
The only thing, though, is that he used to bully defenders in Spain, which was pretty easy. When he goes to Stoke and when he goes to those kind of places, and again, the cliche is in December under the snow, whatever, he will find it more difficult to bully, you know, massive centre halves, unlike what he did in Spain. And I think that would be the test for him as well, more than some other games.
I think Chelsea have enough bullies in their team anyway.
True.
Fernando Morientes syndrome. Players who are good in... Oliver Bierhoff is the other one. Yeah. Players who are good in the air on the continent are not necessarily good in the air in Britain. It's very easy to look at a Spanish player in Italy or a player in Italy and think, God, he wins a lot of headers. I think he'll do really well in England because of that. Quite often it's the opposite, that's their unique skill set abroad.
We're being very harsh on him. He's far better than that.
I think the other interesting thing about Chelsea is that it was clear at the end of last season that various people weren't happy at the club about the style they were playing, and they want a more attractive style at Mourinho. And I think that could be... whether he gives it to them or how that kind of develops. I mean, you probably saw him far more than me, Rory. What do you think?
Eden Hazard.
He was
self-complained about the.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's interesting the dynamic, because obviously Mourinho is Mourinho, and at Chelsea that's a big thing, but Roman Abramovich hasn't changed. Roman Abramovich is still liable to change his mind about things. He still wants attractive football. There is still that kind of desire to be aesthetically pleasing. I think a major trophy, a Premier League or a Champions League might stave that off for a bit. But I don't think anyone is under the illusion that Jose Mourinho is going to spend the next 10 years at Chelsea.
Look, you only have to look at history. Jose knows that if he started indifferently, he could be sacked by September. That's the reality of being the Chelsea manager. And many clubs, big clubs in Europe, are the same vein. They will do that.
Speaking of managers, the Premier League is an interesting place at the moment. You've got Mourinho, who's the kind of the biggest name manager in the world still. You've got Louis van Gaal, who was arguably the star of the World Cup. Rodgers, Pochettino, Martinez, Wenger. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody. Who am I forgetting? Alan Pardew. All these big tactical geniuses. Tony Pulis. Nigel Pearson.
Pellegrini,
that's the one. It's a manager's lead, isn't it? For the first time in a long time, it's not going to be a lead that's defined by who the star player is. Because there isn't really an obvious star player at the moment. There's a few candidates. But there are a lot of big-name managers with big ideas, and that surely is good for the Premier League. You all look like you don't want to answer that. Julian?
Yeah, no, I think it's brilliant. Only Marcelo Bielsa is missing, and we've got him in front, so we're very happy with that. But yeah, you're right, And it'd be very interesting to see mind games through the season, to see tactical changes, to see, you know, if Van Gaal can, you know, reproduce what he did in the World Cup in terms of changing games halfway through them and things like that. And see maybe if the three at the back will come here as well. And then if United start playing that way, if Rodgers maybe try again, you know.
Well, Pardew's tried it. Harry Redknapp, by all accounts, is thinking about trying it with Ferdinand as a sweeper.
Well, I found it really intriguing. We haven't mentioned Man United at all, okay? And Van Gaal's come, he's made the final of the World Cup.
Semi-final
of the World Cup. And what was clear of watching United was they look fitter. Now, whatever we say, he's immediately had an impact, because what we've seen them on the tour of America, everyone, I was saying to Gary off here, I said, Rooney looked fitter than he did in the World Cup. The World Cup's the ultimate aim for getting yourself in peak fitness. He's obviously trained very hard with United and come to the start of the season in really good condition. And United as a team looked in great condition. So I think that's going to be a big plus. And I expect United to be a far different animal this year, because sometimes you get amazing impact. People who walk in a door and do dramatic change very quickly. And it doesn't have to be big. It can sometimes be little subtle things, but certainly fitness is one thing that United, I felt, in certain games last year, I questioned a lot of players' fitness, as in getting injured, not only just not being in great condition, but getting injured so easily. So I think United would be better.
We talked about momentum in terms of the summers that Arsenal and Man City have had. The way that Van Gaal, the context in which Van Gaal arrived at Man United, where he was this man with the Midas touch at the World Cup, everything he did, even when it was just telling his team to hoof long balls towards Sebastián Huntelaar against Mexico, came off. He looked like this genius. And he's obviously a brilliant manager. His record speaks for itself. But there is a real positivity around him, and that will help United, especially at the start of the season. And their start to the season is quite easy, Gary.
No, absolutely, and certainly on the one occasion I met him, he's got a great aura about him. He comes across so confident, so charming. Yeah. I mean, but he's still got a few little challenges. He's still got the problem. He's going to have to kind of, how he plays the attacking players, how Mata, Van Persie and Rooney all play together. There's still perhaps at the back, you're still not quite sure maybe about them.
Are they title challenges?
No, I think defensively,
perhaps a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, they'll have to be better. I'm not sure he can go Smalling, Jones, Johnny Evans. That really is going to be strong enough.
Surely he's going to buy a centre half.
Yeah, I'm sure he will, but I still think it's not enough. They've lost three of their back four.
I thought Wenger made a good point about the centre back yesterday, and he said, "Well, Man United and Barcelona both wanted Vermaelen, who you could argue is not really where he was, and that tells you how desperate people are for a centre back this summer. And there aren't any, and there just aren't. City are about to buy one, aren't they? But there are no
too many goalkeepers, not enough centre backs.
Not enough centre backs.
That is Gary Jacobs' analysis of the transfer market.
Well, if you look at sort of Chelsea, they probably have got three decent ones: Ivanovic, Cahill, and Terry.
And Zuma as well.
Zuma, whether he goes on loan, but yeah, absolutely. So it's. I mean, if United at the back are probably a little bit short, aren't they?
But if United adds
a centre half, but also Vidal and Cuadrado, for example, to fill the gaps in midfield and as wing backs, then they look even stronger, and then you start thinking, well, actually, they're probably title contenders. You know, they can. Wenger said on Thursday again, you know, no one today can predict who's going to win it. It's impossible. You've got five or six teams that can win it, and that's the beauty of it.
Do you think that's true? Do you think that's a fair assessment, or do you think that's Premier League?
I think he knows that Chelsea are probably a bit ahead of everybody, and that City, because they won it last year and because they kept the same squad and added Mangala, Caballero, Fernando and Sanya and Lampard for the first 6 months, you know, obviously a bit, but he surely is. I think he drew a lot of conclusion from last year, like you said. You know, Liverpool could have won it, Chelsea could have won it, City won it, and it could be exactly the same this year with Arsenal as well, and you know, and the United as well.
We should probably mention Spurs.
It feels like it's sort of 4 from 7 for the Champions League places, isn't it? If you include Everton and Tottenham in it.
Well, Everton have made a real statement of intent as well, spending £28 million quid.
No one thought they were going to do that. Everyone thought they were going to try and get Lukaku to sign a new contract and get them on loan. The fact that he went out and did it, which I thought was, you know, but Martinez was talking about wanting 6 players this summer, so it'd be interesting now how he's going to find the other 4 or 5 that he needs, where they are loans. He's quite acute in the market though. He knows he loans here, loans abroad, and you know, to fill up the squad. But that was a big statement.
Big test for Everton, because they played a brand of football that was very attractive. We all teams know how to handle them a little bit better. Chelsea were poor against them last year at Goodison and found Everton so hard to play against. I think that will be a different scenario for them. So it's a different season for Martinez, because his team now are going to be watched and they're going to be hunted, because they know they're a good side to play against.
I think the one thing about Martinez is that can he do any better than last year? That's the question. Cool. Yeah, and certainly Spurs obviously thought that, and Martinez thought that when they sort of had a little poke about him in the summer, could we get him to take over at Spurs? They might, you know, can he then, where can he go this year? He's got the Europa League to contend with and perhaps not very much money. So that's an interesting question. And also, in defence for him, he's a bit like Wenger. He inherited a great defence. He's got test to come on how he kind of changes that over time, you know, as players get older.
And they've been so poor in friendlies in their pre-season, which is incredible. I mean, even that defeat against Paderborn, which was, they played so badly, you wonder if that will have an influence on the start of the season, or if they can just push it aside and thinking, well, that was friendly, it doesn't really count, and start the season. But remember last year, they started with a lot of draws as well, and the start was a bit wobbly, and then they got it better, but it'd be interesting stuff.
Just very quickly, if you can nominate one player to shine or one lesser team to surprise the league, who would it be?
I think it's a very big season for young English players. And you think about Luke Shaw and Adam Lallana, can they make it at the top club? You think about Sterling, can he make it in the Champions League? You know, is he really good enough for that level? You think about Wilshere and Oxlade-Chamberlain, it's a massive year for them in their progress, because that's the season where they really have to establish themselves. You think about Joe Hart, we talked about him already. Ross Barkley, can he confirm? Can he do even better? And I think it's a really key season for England and for their young players.
Mm. Well, I think there's a lot of flair. I think a lot of teams are going to have a lot of ability to win games by changing styles quickly and their pace. And like we talked about, Sanchez up front for Arsenal. Could he play there? Will he play on the right? I'm looking forward to seeing Fabregas, like I touched on. I think there's so many players that we can look at and be adventurous in the way they play. And I think managers will try and win games more than... I think Chelsea, the only one team I'd go, I'll tell you what, they ain't going to concede many. The rest of them, I'm not so sure. I think most of them will.
I think we need to have our eyes on the second international break and how many managers might go there. I think Pardew might be an interesting case. Ashley's given him some money this summer.
Spent well on Newcastle.
Spent well, but is he going to deliver? And he's under pressure there. Gary Monk at Swansea, you've got Allardyce. There's quite a few little managers, Paul Lambert in a position there. I think there's that second international break in October will be an interesting thing, whether people survive or not. I mean, even Tony Pulis, as well as he's done at Palace, there's underlying friction there about various sorts of transfers he gets. So
Redknapp as well.
Redknapp, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Redknapp, completely.
I just want to say one player that the striker that Newcastle bought from Montpellier,
Cabella.
Yeah, I saw him a couple of times last year, and I thought he was something a little bit different, a bit of a raw diamond in a striker.
Yeah,
I don't know how he'd do, because it's, you know, you're thinking, well, Montpellier, they obviously got Giroud from there and the same, but he was a player that I thought could win games and change things quite
very quickly. Exciting players. He did well in some of the preseason games. You know, he looked really, really sparkly and And I think it could be him and Sim de Jong, I think, could work really well together.
Sim de Jong is an excellent footballer. Yeah. I saw a lot of him. He'd struggled a bit last year for Ajax, but the season before he was superb. Times his runs like Frank Lampard, times it runs right. late from deep. Really, really, really clever signing. I think Newcastle have done very well.
What do you make about Ben Arfa at Newcastle, Julian?
Oh, so we probably need a whole podcast to talk about it.
Is he a strange lad, Julian? Because he's so much promise and he's an impact player and change and wins games.
Yeah, he's... I don't know where to start. He's of all that 87 generation we have, so Ben Arfa, Benzema, Najri, Menez, all those kind of guys, he's probably the most talented of them all.
Yeah.
Just not sure he has the mentality to go with it, the attitude to go with it, and he gets very impatient. And I think you see that during games and through the whole of a season, where if he doesn't play enough, if he doesn't play where he wants, he can switch off a bit, and that's a big problem. And I do think that Newcastle didn't treat him the way he should have been treated. I have to say, I don't think Pardew has been fair to him in many ways. However, I don't think he's been fair to Newcastle either. So I don't see much future for those two together.
Well, there you go. That has been the game without Gabriele Marcotti. Next week, Julien Laurent will be doing it on his own, and the subject matter will just be Hatem Ben Arfa.
What are your predictions for the season, Mr. Rory?
There's no point in predictions for the season. I was going to ask you who's going to win the league, but there's no point if the transfer window's not shut, so you can't give a proper answer.
Come on, Rory.
My least favourite part of the journalistic year is FA Cup third round weekend, when the desk ring and say, can you tell us who's going to win the cup? What a pointless prediction that is. Yeah. It depends entirely on the draw. So we are not doing who's going to win the Premier League, and we'll do it the first week of September when the transfer window's shut, which is the best time to do it. That's it for this week. Many thanks to my guests, Tony Castorino, Gary Jacob and Julien Laurence. Times Plus members get exclusive football, rugby and cricket highlights free as part of your subscription. There is a £1 trial available, or you can check out thetimes.co.uk, the perfect way to read our brilliant writing without worrying about getting ink on your hands. We'll be back next week with Gabriele Marcotti at the helm and hopefully slightly less chaos. Thanks for joining us.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.